Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series Power Tool Accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for August the 21st, 2020. This is episode number 20. Today, we'll be talking about Kandi debuts two low-cost cars, Lucid tops Tesla in charging and acceleration, the 2021 Porsche Taycan gets a performance boost. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs editor and Inside EVs forum moderator. Joining us today, we have Tom Malogny, multiple EV owner and Inside EVs editor. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, we have Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Motoring and One Lap YouTube channels. He also puts together the super awesome videos for the new Inside EVs YouTube channel. Go subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Especially those ladies and gentlemen of the audience whose status is single and whose Friday night is set to be spent conversing with their cat about existential dread and the horrifying prospects of aging alone. And that's because we bring you potentially good news, at least if you're Tesla owners. There's an app on the way that might hold the answer to ending your lonely weekend spent anticipating the start of the work week. It's called Tesla Dating, and like it sounds, it is for Tesla owners wanting to date other Tesla owners. Now, it's not up on any app stores yet, so don't cancel your weekend plans of grooming your cat or dog. You can, though, leave your email address at tesladating.co, and they'll send you an email to get you on the app once it's ready to go. And as they say, you cannot spell love without EV. So now we don't think we need to talk about this a lot. In fact, I feel like I've already said too much, but Kyle, you're a Tesla owner. If you are single, which you aren't, would you be interested in dating another Tesla owner? Is that actually even a type?
No, probably not. I mean, I think all I really want out of this is a recording of the first date over dinner. I mean, I just want to know, you know, what software version are you on? Sounds like the most dreadful thing ever. I mean, we have gone too far with this. And, you know, the thing is, it's just going to be a whole bunch of guys for the one girl that's on there. And it's going to just be awful. I think it's a funny idea. It certainly has made me laugh over the last couple of days telling some friends about this. And of course, we've had some laughs as well. And, you know, I think we all joined by now, though, right? So we're all matching. I matched with Tom. So, you know, it's just you'll go and meet some cool people and maybe you'll find eternal love with a Tesla owner. But honestly, I don't think I would want that. So what do you think? What do you guys think, Tom? Would you ever do this?
Well, what happens if you choose a restaurant for your first date that has a Tesla destination charger and you arrive first? Are you supposed to walk in or are you supposed to be the gentleman and leave the spot open for the lady to come and plug her Tesla in? It's too confusing for me. I don't think I would go for this. I'm not smart enough to figure out the proper way to handle that type of situation.
That's some new dating etiquette popping up. All right. Yeah, we'll just move right along there. Okay. Well, so the big news of the week actually is the debut of not one, but two low-cost cars from Kandi Technologies, I think they used to be called. The K27 is a four-seater that strongly resembles, by which I mean it's pretty much a copy of the Daihatsu Cast. It's a front-wheel drive and has a top speed of 63 miles an hour. It has a 17.69 kilowatt-hour battery that is optimistically said to give a range of about 100 miles. It has a peak output of 20 kilowatts, which translates to about 26.82 horsepowers. And it comes with a price tag of $17,499. From what I understand, it was originally sold. If you're watching this on YouTube, that's the one with the round headlights there on, I think, your left. So from what I understand, it was originally sold in China by a company called Ling Mao as the box, but it was purchased by Kandi in a partnership with Shanghai Maple, which is a Geely brand, which is the same company that makes or owns Volvo, among other things. So, okay. So then there's the more, also the more capable K23, and that is a four-seater also, and it has front-wheel drive and a top speed of 70 miles an hour. It boasts a sizable 41.4 kilowatt-hour battery and is said to get 188 miles of range. It puts out 49 kilowatts or about 65.71 horsepower. That's about like the old Beetles, I think, used to put out. Its price tag reads $27,499. Now, those prices are before the federal tax rebate, so they would be respectively $9,999 and $19,999 with that tax rebate included, plus any local incentives. So they are finding buyers, apparently. The company is reporting 463 pre-orders. So, Tom, are any of these cars calling your name?
Definitely not calling my name. As a fun car, like Kyle has that smart electric drive that he drives off road and just beats the crap out of it. And for something like that, I assume, but I don't really have the need for a car like that. You know, the 63, the K27, and by the way, the nomenclature is a little strange on this. Usually as the numbers higher, that's like the better trim. It's the opposite with the Kandi. The better car has the lower number. The K23 is the larger car with the bigger battery and the more range. The K27 is the smaller one that has, you know, as you mentioned, 20 kilowatt max output. I can probably run faster than that, and the top speed is 63 miles an hour. So you probably can't take that thing out on the highway almost anywhere, and it be safe. So it's kind of like a neighborhood electric vehicle. And I think there's better choices out there for something like that. As you said, the range, you know, they're saying 100 miles with a 17.69 kilowatt hour battery. The smart electric drive had basically the same size battery, the 17 kilowatt hour battery. So, you know, I think we could use that as a goalpost for approximate range. This might go a little further because it's so weak and underpowered that, you know, that will help it go a little bit further. The K23 is a little bit more interesting to me. That might work for some people. And it's inexpensive, but it's not like dirt cheap. It's still, you know, $30,000 before incentives. I'd be much more inclined to recommend like a base Leaf to somebody than this. Let's see. You know, the more the merrier. I certainly am not saying we shouldn't give this company a try, but even the warranty, it's only got a 62,000 mile warranty for the batteries. You know, that's pretty short. So that's telling me they don't have a lot of confidence in the battery pack. So, buyer beware as far as I'm concerned.
Kyle, what do you think about this thing? Would you buy this?
The exact opposite of Tom. I love it. I would buy the little baby one with the circular headlights. I think it's so cool. And I just want to play bumper cars with them. Can we talk about this presentation for a second, though? Because this was the most dreadful vehicle launch presentation. I mean, it makes Cadillac look like they knew exactly what they were talking about with this Lyriq. It was really bad. I thought they did a very poor job. The people there were unprofessional. They didn't know anything about the cars. They used kilowatt instead of kilowatt hour. And I really think they did the cars a total disservice on the launch. And also this whole like Americans driving the car, like totally fake saying they love it, like the Chevy commercials, like that was just silly. I thought it was so weird. They brought on a auto journalist from the Gentleman Racer. I forget the guy's name, but seems like he knows what he's doing. And they just on the stream itself were like trying to pry him into saying nice things about the car. And he I think stood his ground pretty well and was like, look, yeah, basically what he was saying is it's kind of a pile of crap, but it's kind of cool because of the price. You kind of just, you can justify it with the price. Right. Personally, I would be super interested in the K27, which is the base little cheap one, just to like drive around the track and use it like how I use my regular smart car and maybe take it into town. And I already have a friend who ordered one. So, I mean, like, I think people are going to look at the price and say, for 10 grand, I can commute to work. And as a pure, you know, cost savings, if you buy this car and commute for the next 5 years, it probably will pay for itself in fuel savings over a Suburban or something like this. So right. I see the benefit. I also don't know why someone wouldn't go and buy a used Leaf, a used i3, a used Smart Electric, something like this, as a more premium product that's going to be highway capable. But think about what these things will cost in just a couple of years. They'll be a $1,500, $2,000. We're going to play a whole soccer tournament with like 30 of them with a giant soccer ball. It's going to be amazing.
Kyle, you are the outlier. You know that, right?
Always.
And you made one comment that you'd like to use a K27 like you use your smart car. I've been down to your track. I've off-roaded with you with your smart car. And I will go on record to say, if you did that with the K27, it would not last long. And you know, maybe I should know a little bit more about how it's built. But what I do know is how Mercedes built the smart car. Those things are tanks. They're like one of the best built cars on the road. I think most people don't realize that. But I think Mercedes over-engineered it because it was so small. They wanted to make people safe in the cars. They're almost indestructible. I doubt the K27 is built like that. And I would venture to say, if you did half the things with the K27 that you do with your Smart, that it would just constantly be broken. You'd be breaking suspension parts and control arms and all that stuff. We should have videos pumping now of you driving your Smart off road. But
I think that's a good test.
I think it's fun to say that and everything, but in reality, it's hard for me to understand why somebody would buy this as opposed to buying a used Leaf for 10 grand.
Right.
Yeah. Like, dollars for dollar. I mean, the tax credit is the only way this makes sense if you really need it. And then whatever the resale market on the car is, like people were buying up Konas a year ago, taking the tax credit and selling them for sticker. Like, that was pretty cool. They were just doing, they were having fun with the car for a little while. My dad got two of them and did that. I don't think the used market's going to be there for this car. So you're probably better off, like Tom said, getting a better car for a lower total cost of ownership in a used, better quality EV. But there's still something about this kind of weird Chinese electric car that's, you know, just so silly and weird looking that I do love. I really do love it because it's so bad. It's like Elon Musk's song that he put together. I can't remember what it was. It was so bad that you kind of have to listen to it. So,
don't doubt your vibe, man.
Don't doubt your vibe. Yeah, it's kind of like that.
How about the Volt dance? Do you remember the Chevy Volt dance back in 2010? That was so bad you had to watch it. But one last thing, not to continue to drag this thing on, but you were talking about it might make sense because of the incentives and because of the tax credit. And I know I've said this in previous episodes, but it's something that's really important to me. And I think it needs to just be constantly stated that we need to rewrite the federal tax credit. It really bothers me that, foreign companies can come in and sell their cars in the U.S. and get the $7,500 federal tax credit. When companies like Tesla and GM, American companies that were kind of pioneering electric vehicles, they went out there and did them early, and they brought electric vehicles to the market and helped drive this whole electrification process. And now their tax credits have expired, so they're at a competitive disadvantage over all these new car companies that are bringing their cars here. That thing needs to be rewritten. The federal tax credit, the limits per manufacturer has to go away. There's got to be one big pool or sunset at a certain year, 2023, 2024, and then that's it, and it drops for everybody. But we need to reinstate that for the American car companies, because this is being subsidized by American taxpayers. So it's a shame that the two biggest American car companies that are making electric vehicles don't get the tax credit anymore when everybody else does, especially now we've got cars from China coming, companies from China importing their cars to the U.S. and American taxpayers subsidizing their products when I can't get a tax credit on an American-made car. So now I stood on my soapbox for a little while. We can move on.
No, but I agree. It makes so much sense.
Yeah. But yeah, talking about the car just for a second. So the K27, like the one that Kyle likes, it looks like the Daihatsu. You know, I get your point. I like the way it looks, but man, I just feel like it's like unsafe. Like I wouldn't want to be in a low speed accident with it because I just don't know.
Well, it doesn't go very fast.
Yeah, I'm more. But if, you know, it's so small and if something hits you, it's like, man. Like I have that old pickup truck and old Ranger from the 80s in my garage, and sometimes I would think, man, if I'm ever in an accident with that, you know, it feels kind of substantial. But you know, those things fold up. So yeah, it's the same thing with for $9,000 for $10,000, like I got my 2015 Spark EV for $9,000 with like 9,000 miles on this odometer. I would much rather have that than this brand new 0 mile.
Yeah, your Spark is pretty cool. I got to drive it. Oh, I have that video coming, I think next week as well.
Awesome. Yeah, and the K23, the other one, man, do you have a profile view of that, Handy Martin? If you're watching on YouTube, if you just like look at the thing in profile, like the bottom sill, it's like a good 6 inches. So it looks like the doors are like these kind of mini doors. Like I don't know how you'd even, you know, you have to kind of pry yourself in. Like you can see the picture there for you watching us on YouTube. It looks like at least 6 inches between the bottom of the car and then the bottom of the door, you know? It looks yeah.
That's ugly.
And
you gotta go for the base one.
Oh my God, it's so ugly. I can't even. Yeah. I mean, people were kind of ragging on the K27 because it looked like the Daihatsu, but that's a strong point, you know. I mean,
that's a good looking car.
They should have copied something else for like the Honda Fit because it's kind of got those dimensions.
I was just thinking the same thing. It's a very Honda Fit like, but hey, look, it's got a Cybertruck front hood. You see that little triangle in the front there where it meets? It's got that little bulge there. So this is the cheap Cybertruck now.
Yeah. Man, it's got a face only a mother could love. It's like, geez. Anyway, sorry, Candy. You know, good luck to you. And yeah.
Hey, I'm still pro on Candy. I think they'll find their niche. I think they'll do well here. And again, it's all Geely Tech or Geely Tech for the most part. So we'll see. They also have a huge history of making super durable power sports products. So maybe they carried through some of their jet ski, their boat, their ATV, UTV tech into
is that
this.
Candy stuff?
Yeah, that's all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see if it's durable. Like Tom said, I will definitely have to test that. No question.
I know people have been talking because Candy's been a public company for a while. So back at like 2015 or so, I remember people like talking the stock up a little bit, you know, trying to, you know, rev up the brand. But, you know, it's just kind of either car back then was even, I forget the name of it. It's like a really super small and kind of cute, but odd. But anyway, yeah. So that's Candy Technologies. Unless you had something to say about that, Martin?
I've used shopping carts with bigger wheels than on these two cars. Aren't they dinky? But, I mean, can you even get spare tires for them? Or have I got to pry them off my son's child's toy skateboard? But, no, it's like for $10,000. And then the difficult thing is, like with the tax credit, of course, you know, it's a $10,000 car after the tax credit, right? Money off next year's tax bill, right? If you're eligible. So those people that are eligible have got more naturally have more money to spend. So why would somebody who is slightly more well off then buy a car like this, which is purely, unless you're the other end of the scale, unless 10 grand for you is like a, you know, I'd spend it on a, you know, if you'd spend it on a boat this year or something, or like your leisure time and you've got a farm and you just want a crazy, quiet electric car that you're going to run into the ground. It's a bit of a dichotomy, but it's fun. I mean, you know, run it for a couple of years, take the battery out, use it for home storage, crack on.
Well, let's see how they go from here. Maybe they'll take their what they learned from this exercise of launching these two cars and maybe come up with a more interesting, you know, future product, maybe something to match the market a little bit better.
Well, I think it's definitely, like you mentioned, matching the market. It's the first time in the EV history in the US, for the most part, that we've seen a product launch for vehicles that are not optimized for our market at all. I mean, not in any way. We do, like Tom had mentioned, we do a ton of highway driving. We need, you know, big range because our efficiency is low cruising on the highway at 70, 80 miles an hour. These cars don't fit that bill and they're for any inner city use. And I mean, it's a very small subset of people that are going to buy this. I agree. But I still think we'll see some orders from this commuting ideology where if you really have this sort of back road under 70 mile an hour commute, you can save that gas money. I think that might be a sell. We'll see. Yeah,
I wouldn't take either of these on the interstate. It's just scary. It's just
one of the things.
If anything happens, you know.
There's also some state rebates. Like here in New Jersey, the K27, depending on how many miles of range it has, it might be eligible for another $2,000 of incentives. So now you're talking about a brand new car for $8,000. I probably still wouldn't buy it, but that's crazy. Now, I just spent $3,600 on a bicycle. So two of my bikes, I could have bought a car.
This goes faster than your bicycle and it's safer. It's worth the extra money.
And in the winter, you're going to be dry. So, you know, why not?
I think if we get one of these, we should have a little race with Tom on his bicycle and you in the K27. That would be awesome, man.
Drag race against Tom.
It is an e-bike. So, I might be able to beat you.
Yeah, it's $3,600. They better have something going on.
Better pop a wheelie every time you hit that throttle.
All right. So last week, we told you that the Lucid Air should get about 517 miles of range. This week, we've learned a few more things about that luxury sedan. The big thing is that it will charge at over 300 kilowatts, so that one could add about 300 miles of range in 20 minutes, which is, you know, pretty remarkable. And we also learned that it will beat a Raven Tesla Model S performance off the line and probably over the quarter mile. So when it debuts here shortly on the 9th of September, it will wear the crown for range, charging speed, and quickness. That, I think, is how you launch a new car company in the US. Product comes first. Kyle, how psyched are you about the Lucid Air now that we know these things?
Right. Well, I, you know, they're doing everything right. They've been really quiet up to this point. They got the funding they needed. They've built a super solid product, I believe, in a prototype stage. And now they're just sitting back. You know, of course, Peter Hockholding, our head of production, is getting that factory going in Casa Grande, Arizona. They're ticking all the right boxes here. And just think about the specs here. You have 500 plus mile range. You have, what is it, some crazy, 300 miles of range in 20 minutes. It's a 300 kilowatt peak or so. We'll see how long it can sustain. But a high 900 volt battery pack really means huge efficiency. It means that chargers are going to have to work less to get you the same amount of power. So hopefully they don't thermal throttle on their end. And the car is definitely going to have a DC to the DC booster of some kind to charge on older, you know, 50 kilowatt chargers that can only go up to 400 volts. The Taycan has the same problem. They have an onboard booster. I'm super psyched about this. No question this car will hold the Cannonball record here in the US. And it is by far going to be the best way to travel. The big question is going to be charging station reliability. When you plug your $100,000 Lucid in, whatever it's going to cost, the way you spec it out, is Electrify America going to charge the Lucid on the first go? And the answer right now would be a question mark. However, we'll start to see hopefully some station reliability now that there's more partner manufacturers, more stress on them to push Electrify America to have a really good, solid network, because that's really the key. They have a great rollout. You have great charging. You have great long distance ability. Just need the chargers to work.
So we should say we kind of know a little bit more about these races that we can't say anything about, but there's been a lot of pushback on Twitter and even in our comment section, but the Tesla maybe wasn't the latest or greatest, but yeah, it definitely is like a brand new Raven Model S performance, and it gets beat, which, you know, it's fine because Tesla can come back and try to compete against that again. You know, it's fine. It's like, and it's, I think it's going to be a slightly different price bracket than the Tesla Model S 2. I think it's going to be a bit more expensive, I guess, for that, for the upper, for the large body anyway. But yeah, I'm hoping they really push Tesla on their interiors or luxury interiors, just move a little more. Yeah. Anyway, but anyway, yeah, Tom, tell us something. What can you tell us about this?
So we got a lot of information about Lucid Charging this week. Not just the fact that it does the peak; it has a peak charging rate of over 300 kilowatts and can replenish 300 miles in 20 minutes. We also found out that it's going to be the vehicle is going to launch with vehicle to grid capability, and Lucid is making their own home charging solution, their own home charger. There's a picture of it up on screen right now, and that can deliver 19.2 kilowatts to the car. So it's a very robust home charging, and the fact that it's vehicle to grid capable, that charger is vehicle to grid capable. So the combination of the car, and if you buy Lucid's home charging solution, you'll be able to power your house with your car through the AC. So, it's going to be CCS capable also for a vehicle to grid. However, there's really no CCS stations that are capable of doing that yet. You know, that whole protocol still has to get all worked out. But the car will be able to power your home basically out of the box if you buy their home charging solution. That's great news.
So if we do that, if we like plug our car into our house to power the house, do we have to turn off like the master switch to the grid first or something to prevent islanding?
That's something that will definitely be a topic of discussion, because you could potentially be backfeeding the grid. And if the grid is out and there's people service, trying to repair the wires or whatever. So, I mean, it would be basically like a generator. You'd have a transfer switch where you'll have to disconnect your home from the grid to use it. But what Lucid also talked about was, and I don't know how big the use case is for this, but, you know, they said, well, you know, it'll be fantastic for people that have like little cabins or something out in rural areas where they aren't connected to the grid, that they could actually install the charger there and then, you know, have power in the house when they go up and visit on the weekends.
Man, we're just looking at this, at the video here that was shown on the YouTube of the Lucid prototype, just roasting tires, man. I never thought of Lucid as like a performance brand. Like, you look at the car, the styling. Actually, the styling doesn't really do anything for me. But I'm thinking of Lucid as like a luxury brand. But after seeing that beatdown and like watching this little video that you were just playing, Martin, and this thing's got some. This is like a performance brand coming up here. I mean, it's luxury performance. Should Mercedes be worried? Martin?
I think that they are, yeah, right. So they are, as we said at the beginning of this segment, that this is how to do a product launch. It is, you know, you don't have to be the best at everything, which is the frustrating thing that I think I find sometimes with elements of certain communities where they want their favorite brands to be, you know, the best. I sort of want to send them back pictures of an electric backhoe and wait for them to reply, my Tesla digs my garden better than that does, because they're just so irrational, right? They're just so, right, they can't get their head around the fact that there could be a car possibly better in one way than the one that they are signed up to defend at all costs. But yeah, you're right. Like the reaction, we saw this one video that went online, the drag strip video, and just the reaction, so frustrating, because rather than wanting to see the EV community build, like that rising tide floating all boats that I've talked about before on this podcast, just that division that is coming, that I think this is a phenomenon over the last 6-12 months that I've seen more and more of, just people just getting angry, being like, no way is that faster than a Tesla. And like the Tesla driver was sleeping, and like, that's a 2012 car. None of which were true. That it like that that can't be the only run that they did, right? If they if someone's taken a video of it, there would have been lots of runs. Can't wait to see more when we can find out more about this. But so what? So what if it goes quicker? Good on them, because all it'll do is it'll make everyone get better. It'll make that maybe the plaid version of S and X will come quicker than it was going to come. So it's positive. Everybody wins when things like this happen. So I saw that frustration. Well, I saw that and I was frustrated myself, because along with the positivity came this huge amount of negativity of it can't possibly do that. Like, I refuse to believe it. Well, I didn't think of Lucid as a performance brand either, to answer your question, but it's quick. And like, how much quick do you need? Well, if you've got it, you're not going to say no. Of course, this is luxury executive. This is not a price point that I'd be buying a car, for instance. But man, is it exciting. Have we seen interior pictures yet? Because I can't think what the inside looks like.
Is he counting on his head?
We have. Not okay. A production version. That's what we're going to see September 9th.
Yeah, so that's what we're waiting. So we'll see more on the 9th. And of course, on the 9th as well, we'll see what we're going to come onto in a minute, which is more from Tesla, from Lucid.
Hey Tom, have you seen the interior though, of the production interior yet, that you can't talk about?
Unfortunately, no. I was invited to go out to California next Thursday and have a preview and record videos, shoot pictures, and so forth and so on. So I'd be ready to go on the 8th. But you know, had some conversations with my wife, and we decided that, you know, the 12-hour round trip, 12 hours on a plane to spend 6 hours in California, probably isn't the smartest thing to do right now. Decided against it. So Lucid is going to provide me with that information. I just won't be able to see it firsthand.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing the interior. That's going to be a key. I mean, I want it to be good, you know. So.
I don't have any doubt that it will be, because I think the styling of it is so good. Like,
exterior?
I love the exterior. And okay. And I love the look of that charger that we were flashing up. If you're watching the YouTube version of this a minute ago, it was unfussy. And I hate to draw everything back to Tesla, but this is where a big cohort of the Lucid team came from. And, you know, back in the day when Tesla first arrived, we were all blown away. And still are at their aesthetic and their design aesthetic and everything that seems, it's like when the iPhone first arrived, it just seems so obvious. Like, well, this is how a car should be, like the infotainment system inside, bits of it inside a Tesla. And I know that, you know, fans of the Polestar and the Android system more recently, but that charger looked so good. The styling is good. I have no doubt the interior is going to be good, because I just think they're switched on. They're just, they've got it going on right now. I really can't wait to see more. And I think that even the styling of their other cars is going to be bang on.
Right. Well, so speaking of their other cars, that's not the only Lucid vehicle in the news this week. They've also
like
had
that?
Their
little segue right? There for you, Dom.
There we're not supposed to talk about the segue. First rule about the secret segue. Okay.
Talk about.
So. That's not the only Lucid thing we've seen. We've also now just seen their SUV spotted out in the wild. A number of pictures of the Air and this SUV were posted on Twitter. And I don't know, do you have a shot of that we can share with her YouTube audience?
I do. Yes, I do. And then, again, this one was a little more controversial in terms of the styling of the SUV.
Yeah. Yeah, we can kind of see that. Yeah, if you can dig up the tweet, we get a few more shots of it. But that basically gives you a good profile look. You know, it's got some big, ugly wheels. It looks like a pretty large vehicle, though, right? It's on the same platform, I understand, as the Lucid Air, as a sedan. But, it looks pretty big. There's a guy standing beside it. It kind of reminds me of, across the back, it reminds me of, like, the Rivian SUV. It's got that single brake light all the way across the bar. And then on the side, kind of, it puts me in mind of the Fisker Ocean a little bit, you know, not too much, but like on huge wheels. And those wheels are, I don't know, I think they're ugly. But Kyle, you're a wheel expert. What do you think of that?
Oh, I'm no wheel expert. You know, my opinion will never agree with yours. I love the wheels.
Oh, really?
You know, I think I like the SUV more than the air in this particular case. I think the air looks really good until you get to the C pillar. And then that big clamshell trunk thing just doesn't do it for me. The only thing I can say that I don't particularly love about this SUV, first off, you can see that huge rake to the windshield. Aesthetically, I like big boxy SUVs, you know, Range Rovers, things like this. But I think for efficiency, that's why you see that much rake on that windshield. The second thing is that straight taillight across the back. Now, I know, again, I'm the outlier here. I actually have never seen a car that I've liked that's had a consistent beam across the rear. I know it's the trend we're going to. It just reminds me of Dodge Chargers, not super into it. But other than that, I think they nailed it with this. You know, I'd like to see them spec a little bit of a wider tire. I understand why it's not as wide. You get a little bit better range if you have a little bit of a stretch on that sidewall, putting a narrower tire for the wheel, basically. It could just be a concept thing, of course. Concept, you know, car designers love big wheels, little tires.
Right.
So we'll see if this is production ready or not. My guess is no. But I think they're off. They're going to do very well with this vehicle. It's what's needed. And, you know, we're going to see great figures as well. They said it's going to be almost as efficient as the Air. So we're expecting around 500 miles of range out of this thing. That's insane. It's going to be really cool.
I never really noticed that those roof racks are kind of like, you know, like a permanent fixture. Looks like it has a glass roof too.
I would guess you could get it with or without, just for efficiency, knowing Lucid every last quarter of a percent, you know, they'll lose sleep over. I think it looks really good with those roof rails, particularly. And right. The color combo is not bad. At first, I thought it was a brown, then it's green, and then you see it some other light, and you just, I think it's a cool color. And looks perfect there in California.
Tom.
It is a panoramic glass roof, by the way. I've seen the right. shots from above. I'll try and bring one up. And that is a glass roof all the way to that rear roof rack okay. as well, by the look of
cool.
it. Yeah, the whole thing is glass by the look
hey,
of
Tom,
it.
Hey, Tom, do you think you'd drive this over the sedan?
Definitely. I really like the styling on hey. This guy here. And I love how, you know, Lucid took you know the their vehicle their car the Air and made like interpreted that into an SUV. It really, you can see it's got all Lucid styling. It really is. I think it's a winner. I think the roof rails probably also would be optional. You know, and this could just be, you know, special stylistic roof rails for their concept. You know, and when the production vehicle comes, it might have a different way that they attach to the vehicle. They might not be permanent. Like those appear to be, you know, permanently attached to the vehicle. But no, I think they hit it well. I think it's the right vehicle. You know, we've said this before. That's what people, at least here in the US, that is what people are buying, SUVs, crossovers, you know, so, you know, that kind of, and pickup trucks. So, you know, that kind of had to be their next vehicle. I don't think that they would. I think the electric pickup truck, you know, crowd is getting a little crowded now. So I'm glad that they decided to go into the family moving SUV segment rather than a pickup truck. But like talking about pickup trucks, like Rivian, it seems Lucid is just kind of doing everything right, which is it's so encouraging to see that. I'm echoing sentiments of, you know, Martin and Kyle went talking about that. You know, they just seem to be hitting everything. You know, every time we hear news about them, it's better and better. You know, it's kind of like the, you know, under promise, you know, over deliver. And we just keep getting, the news just keeps getting better. And I'm so excited about seeing Lucid, both Lucid and Rivian coming to market next year. I think this is going to be really a great time for electric vehicles, that new brands are coming that are delivering compelling vehicles that people are going to be excited about, not just like, oh yeah, it's an electric car and it goes 300 miles. That's nice. I mean, we need those vehicles too. But the fact that these new brands are coming out with really exciting vehicles that are pushing the limits, that are doing things that existing electric vehicles can't do. I think that's really the story there. And it's good time for electric vehicles. I'm looking forward to 2021.
And they're doing things
that, like
and they're doing things that you know, gasoline powered vehicles can't do either. Like the Dodge Ram, I guess call it T-Rex, just debuted this week. It's like the Raptor fighter Dodge pickup truck, and it's like a, what is it, 4 seconds 0 to 60 or something. It's like, man, the Rivian pickup truck is going to beat that, you know, next year as far as like pure acceleration. I guess the Ram also has like 13 inches of travel, you know, so it's made for like going fast like off-road. And I don't know if you can, I don't know how the Rivian set up for that, but the Rivian can ford 3 feet of water, so there's that. But yeah, I just think that the electric products coming are really just like spec wise you know, I don't see why people would consider buying a fossil fuel car, but then again, I'm biased and whatever, so yeah. But I do like
well,
the idea.
Well, to your point, I think it's going to be really difficult for fossil fuel truck owners to get over the towing hurdle with electric vehicle pickup trucks. I think that's just the big question for me. Even, you know, we have this solar trailer, this big trailer now that we have with solar panels on the roof. I have a power wall coming to put inside of it probably. And I'm thinking about what we're going to get to tow with it. And I'd love to have an electric vehicle to tow, but this is probably a 7,000-8,000 pound trailer. I'm just thinking about the range on any electric vehicle that we tow with this thing is going to be minimal for road trips. So it's going to be something we're going to have to look into for this type of use case for these pickup trucks. But like Tom says, a lot of people buy pickup trucks just to drive around, go to the shops, and that's where these are absolutely perfect. And they can still haul, they can tow. It's just over a long distance is going to be tough.
Right, especially if there's like a, well, is that trailer you're talking about, is that a camper trailer or is that like just a utility trailer?
No, it's a car hauler.
Oh, okay, so you might have to do some distance. So what's a good distance for you while towing?
Like a good range I'd really like to get 200 miles with a trailer on the back. I think that for me is reasonable. You know, with an 80% charge, when it starts to taper, a 200-mile cruising range, I could easily live with, even 150 probably.
Okay, I think you can get that with the Rivian and the Cybertruck, right?
We'll
Rivian's
see.
Like
we'll
400 see. Miles, Cybertruck's 500.
Yeah, but trailering more than doubles your consumption. I mean, the way this trailer is, and sometimes triples. On a Model 3, we did a towing test on the Inside EV's YouTube channel. You can go back. And I think we were with a little U-Haul trailer, we're getting 700-800 watt-hour per mile. Hmm. You know, a Model X 100D towing a camper trailer gets a 100-mile range. This is from the Tesla family, the all-electric family YouTube channel. They get 1% is equal to 1 mile. And that's just a little camper. So, I mean, it just kills efficiency.
Okay. Well, that's something to keep in mind. Yeah. But, right. There's still a huge market over there who don't tow over any distance, who is still, I mean, I could see my own pickup. I remember I towed a trailer for the kayaks one time. I think it's pretty much the extent of my towing ability. Yeah. Usually I use it for racks, like for bed extender, whatever.
Right. And we'll see trailers optimized for it as well. We've seen, is it James Claffin? He has a battery pack that he hooked into his Model X, essentially doubling the battery capacity from the trailer and the vehicle. We've seen trailers that can output power and regen on their own on the back of the car. So we'll see solutions to this. I'm just saying right now, this is a big question mark for me personally.
Right. Yeah. Camping trailers, actually powered camping trailers. I think that's going to be really super awesome. I gotta believe it's coming eventually, right? Like, so your camper has all the power you need, so you can plug in and live in it on the weekend. You have, and then when you're driving, you know, you're driving, it power helps you get up the hills, say, just like in certain instances it could turn on motors in the trailer and, you know, help you up the hill, so you keep lots of range for your primary vehicle.
Yeah, I think there's a French company that's doing it. We should talk about it at some point on the podcast. I need to learn more about it. But yeah, there's one on the market that does exactly that.
Right.
And I'm talking to a company today that just launched a product that is solar panels for the back of pickup trucks. And it folds up. It's in four sections. So it actually secures the bed. It locks, so you know, nobody could get access to the bed. But as you need it, it folds up into four different sections. They're bringing it to market really soon. I don't have all the technical details. I'm actually interviewing the CEO today, and I'm probably going to have an article up on Inside EVs this week. So for people interested in that, that might help for long distance traveling. I know it's not going to provide a ton of energy, but hey, every little bit helps. If you're on these long drives and it's sunny out, Kyle, you know, you might, you know, it might give you an extra 20 or 30 miles, you know, over the course of a few hours of driving if you're in direct sunlight. So,
or if you're camped at a spot over the weekend, you know, you're sitting there. Exactly. Yeah.
And notable about this new solar panels for the back of the truck, it's not just for electric pickup trucks. It has a battery in it so that, you know, if you had a gas pickup truck, you might buy this and it charges the battery. So when you're at work sites, you can use that stored energy to power tools and things like that, or camping to power, you know, whatever you need.
Right. It'd be interesting to see what kind of plan they have to fit different size beds, like the bed of the Rivian, for instance, is the one that comes to mind, you know, because a little bit different shape and size.
Yeah. I plan on some big adventures into the middle of nowhere with these Rivians. I'd really like to do the Pan American Trail, for example, and charging is going to be our main concern. So this is super enticing, at least. You know, I'm of the mindset where we're going to have to travel at night and charge during the day, which will be kind of interesting.
Hmm. Right on. Hey, so let's move along. The Porsche Taycan has launched, or it just launched like a year ago, but the automaker has already made some changes, including more power. They say they shaved off 0.2 seconds from 0 to 200 kilometers an hour. That's 124.3 miles an hour. That's not really a metric that anyone uses, but they did give us an improved quarter mile time as well. They say it'll scoot 1,320 feet, that's a quarter mile, in 10.7 seconds now instead of 10.8. Of course, we've already seen the Taycan dip down into the 10.5 second range. So the numbers that Porsche is giving us are understated. They have some other changes as well, besides a little bit more power. They have a plug and charge function. Basically, insert the cable and the Taycan establishes encrypted communication with the plug and charge compatible charging station. And, you know, you just get it, the charging starts automatically, the billing starts automatically. It's just seamless, like a Tesla, basically, supercharger situation. So that's great. Different vehicle functions can also be flexibly ordered online. So they call this functions on demand, or FOD. The Porsche Intelligent Range Manager is already available as an FOD. Power Steering Plus, Active Lane Keep Assist, and Porsche InnoDrive, which I'm not sure what that is, will also be added as further FOD functions. They've also got, as an option, you can get the heads-up display in color, and there's now an optional 22 kilowatt AC onboard charger. And then in the future, there's an adaptive air suspension that will feature a smart lift function, so that it will raise and lower at certain places, like coming into your driveway. You can, you know, geospatially link to that spot, and it'll raise up. So you have a crazy driveway like I have, you can go up without scraping anything. Or on the highway, I think it'll judge your range and maybe lower yourself on the highway automatically when you're driving. So, Tom, are you surprised by the performance increase, or are you more impressed by these new rent-a-feature options?
Well, definitely not surprised. Porsche always does this to their vehicles. They're always constantly tweaking them, taking feedback from customers and you know, adding new options to their vehicles. It really, you know, I don't think this has much to do with the fact that this is an electric Porsche. This is just Porsche, and this is just how they function. They're always making tweaks to their vehicles. You know, I've made it clear my position on the Taycan. I absolutely loved it. I've driven Taycans quite a few occasions. I had the opportunity to drive one out in Denmark and Germany on the Autobahn, and was able to drive mine up to, you know, 167 miles an hour, I think it was. And I just love the car. I love the Taycan. If cost was just taken out of the picture and you could say you can have one EV, I would replace my Model 3 with a Taycan. I absolutely love the vehicle. Love what Porsche did with it. And, you know, it's great to see them making it a little bit better than what they came out with. And they came out of the box with, as far as I'm concerned, a fantastic electric car. So good on Porsche to keep tweaking it, making it a little better.
Right on. So, Kyle, you have any thoughts about this rent a feature or the performance increase?
Yeah, well, the Taycan really needed the extra power. You know, it was just so slow before. You know, I think it's plenty fast. It's great news. What really boggles my mind is this Renta feature. They're almost the first ones. Actually, they might be the first ones to market with this type of feature. And we had a little discussion yesterday, Martin and everyone in our little chat. This is huge news for vehicle ownership. It's something that we're hoping maybe Tesla will go to one day with renting full self-driving features, whatever that means. You know, just the fact that you can purchase over-the-air functionality from your vehicle like you have with only one brand up to this point, and it affects not just autonomous driving systems or ADAS, which InnoDrive is just Porsche's ADAS system. It's Power Steering Plus. It's all the things that are in there. They're just letting you unlock. So I think it's huge. I think it changes what Volkswagen Group's direction is going to look like. We've actually already seen this with e-tron. I'm forgetting. In e-tron, you can purchase cornering lights on your e-tron to be enabled in certain markets. So this is a good thing. I like that you can get into a car at a lower price point, say, you know, I wish I ticked that option. And you just go into the screen in the car and buy it. That's the big news here. The other news is really great. Of course, we know Porsche understates their numbers. Like Tom says, they do for every one of their products. It's always worst case scenario from their internal combustion cars. The way we always refer to it is you'll achieve Porsche's quoted figure at the highest altitude on the hottest day with the poorest fuel quality. And it's the same for their EVs as well. So it's Porsche is my favorite legacy automaker. I have owned them. I love them. I will always continue to love Porsche. And a Taycan's definitely in my future. However, it will have to be used and heavily depreciated.
Right. Well, while we're talking
about the new being able to rent the features, I had always thought it would be an awesome thing if Tesla allowed you to say, have the like I have a Model 3. I didn't get a Model 3 Performance, but I can get the Performance upgrade for $2,000. But it's just not worth it to me to spend $2,000 on it. But I thought it would be really cool if Tesla would have a service that would allow me to have that extra power for like 24 hours, like just for a day. I can go out. Let's say, you know, I'd be willing to pay $100 or $150. For the day to have the extra power, and like whenever you want, you'd go into your website, your My Tesla account, and say, okay, start this at 8 o'clock tomorrow, and let it run till 8 o'clock, Sunday morning, and then I have a whole day of having that extra power boost, and then it goes away. Right. I don't know. I'm sure Tesla could do that. I think that would be a great revenue generator for them because I'm sure a lot of people would temporarily use things like that, maybe even, full self-driving just to see how it works out. Or maybe they're going on a long trip. They don't want to buy the whole thing, but they'd pay, a couple $100 to use it for a week or something like that. That might be a cool thing for Tesla to do. I know customers would love it. I don't know if it makes financial sense to them as opposed to trying to get people on the hook to buy the whole thing. But I could see myself frequently paying, say, $100 for the day to have the performance upgrade for 24 hours.
Along with that track mode.
Yeah.
Yeah. $100? Okay.
I would say track mode's worth more. And you've seen now this electrified garage has this solution that is half the cost of Tesla's boost upgrade. Plugs into your car. We just put it on my friend Joe Tripp's Model 3. We're testing it out and instantly works fine. It's just a line of code and no issues so far. We'll see if Tesla ever finds out or does anything about it, but it seems to be so far working great and the car is performing the same as the acceleration boost would be.
Oh, how's it get down on the one lap?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same. It's just a Model 3 dual motor with performance boost. It's just a basically a cheaper way of doing it by just changing the code rather than paying Tesla to change the code. You just do it on your end for cheaper. I love that idea. I'm a big fan of you buy the car. You can do whatever you want to do with your car as long as you own it. And sure, you don't have to, you know, they can void your warranty or whatever. That doesn't necessarily bother me. So the fact that people are tuning and modifying Teslas now with these electrified garage solutions, I'm all about it. I think it's great. If you have the capability in your car and you own that vehicle, go ahead, modify it, tune it. And hey, if Tesla blocks you from charging, that's a risk.
Right on. Hey, so while we're still talking about the Porsche Taycan, I guess, ostensibly, there's an outfit called Prior Design that just released a body kit that kind of butches up the look a little bit. Martin, do you have a picture of that handy? It's like a wide body kit. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think of that, Martin? Would this look good on a British London street?
Of course it would. Yeah, it looks fantastic. And I love that they're doing the EVs are now at that stage where if you've got the money to do it, you can have a little play and make your car look different.
Right.
Of course anyone can do this to any car. You can wrap your car whatever custom color or crazy outfit, camouflage, whatever you want to put on your car, but to actually add skirts and spoilers and
that big wing,
a huge wing, and I don't know if we've got a shot around the back, and there's probably some stuff around the back as well, but yeah, just fantastic. Just I'm just pleased that EVs are in that stage now, because it just implies a maturity of the EV market, which is what we've wanted to get to for a long time now. As Carl just said, you know, let's take these great cars and let's go have fun with them now, rather than just being grateful that we've actually got the cars. But that's a good thing. We're maturing now into those areas of modding and tuning and stuff like that. So totally excited about something that looks like that. Yes,
right,
please.
Right on.
More of the same. Yes.
All right. Well, I won't spend any time on that. But we've just got a few minutes left. But I want to hit on this. NIO introduced the battery as a service option. Apparently adds some flexibility and reduces uncertainty. Tom, can you tell us a bit about that real quick?
Yeah, so we all know Renault did this with the Zoe for, I think, 4 or 5 years before they decided that they were just going to sell the car with the battery. And, you know, they initially did it, from what I understand, to try to get people into EVs more affordably, because batteries were super expensive, the most expensive part of the car. NIO's different because they already have this ecosystem built out in China of this, their battery swap system. So they're really looking at the battery holistically different than most other electric vehicle companies do. They really are taking more of the burden, NIO, and taking that off of the customer with their battery swap, with unlimited battery swap. So you can basically never have to worry about your battery's capacity loss. If you buy a NIO, they just remove that from the equation. You'll never have to worry that your car won't go as far, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road as it did when it was new. And that's super important, getting people into electric vehicles in China. In part, another reason is that the fact that most Chinese residents don't have control of their home electricity like we do in the U.S. and many people in Europe, because they live in these giant apartment complexes. Now, very wealthy people do have private homes, but there's not a lot of them. Most people live in these large apartment complexes, don't have the ability to charge. So the battery swap really removes that worry from them. They know they can just run out in 6 or 7 minutes, get the battery swapped. Now the battery as a service takes it to one further level, where, you know, you rent the battery separately from the car. The car costs about $10,000 less now. So a $52,000 ES6, if you use battery as a service, costs $42,000. So right now you take $10,000 off the top of the cost of the car, and you rent the battery for $140 per month, right? And that's the price right now. Talk to NIO about this, and they said there's a good possibility that price actually will go down in the future as their costs of the battery reduce, as battery prices go down. they're fully open to reducing that cost to pass that along to the customer. Now, NIO partnered with CATL, their battery supplier, and formed an independent company. So you actually lease the battery from that company. And that company has all second and third life uses for the battery packs and cells, all in the planning now. So as they retire batteries, as let's say, you know, these batteries are still going to get battery swapped. The batteries get checked when they do the battery swaps. If there are cells that aren't working, or if the battery capacity drops, the pack gets taken out of service. And this new third-party company is going to be using it for load balancing. They're even going to be repurposing the battery cells for use in like electric scooters and bicycles. So it's good to have a battery company involved here, that it's not just an automotive brand saying, geez, now what do we do with all these battery cells? We can do home energy storage. We can do like all the companies are talking about doing. But now you've got a battery supplier involved who absolutely has things that they can do with that, with those battery cells. So, I mean, I love this whole ecosystem. And besides, there's one other thing that NIO told me. You know, when NIO first came to the market, they had a 70 kilowatt hour battery pack. Then they had an 84 kilowatt hour battery pack. Now they're going to be offering a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. They see in the near future a larger pack available fitting in that same battery tray. So let's say you lease an ES6 today with a 70 kilowatt hour battery pack, and you use battery as a service, and you're paying your $140 per month. And then you decide, you know what, I'd like to have more range. You can then say, okay, take the 70 kilowatt hour battery pack and give me your 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. You'll pay a little bit more per month instead of 140. I don't know, it might be 150, 160 a month. It won't be too much more, but it'll be more. And then 2 or 3 years from now, let's say they come out with a 130 kilowatt hour battery pack. You can get that if you want. You could say, take this 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. I don't want it. I want that new one that even goes even further. They'll let you simply just get out of that lease and begin leasing the new battery pack. And it might not even cost any more. So, you know, they're really, NIO's thinking outside of the box. They're doing some great things in China. I'm really bullish on that company. I know they had a slow start, but they seem to have the ground under them now. And they're hitting on all cylinders. And I really like this. Particularly for the Chinese market. I don't know if it would work as well in other countries, particularly because it works really well with battery swap. And
right.
NIO already has 143 battery swap stations. They also have DC fast chargers, so you don't have to swap your battery. They're building out a network of high-speed charging stations. So if you have the time or you're not near a battery swap station, you can charge the car on NIO's DC fast charger or a third party network. But you know, this battery as a service, I think it works, and I think it's going to be successful for them. I think they're going to sell a lot more cars in 2021 because of it.
Well, that makes a lot more sense, because for me, like Renault, you were saying that you can rent the Renault battery separate from the car, and I could never wrap my head around why you would want to do that, because you know, you have to pay for the battery. The battery has to be paid for by somebody, and the car company is not going to take a loss on that. So it's like getting two bills for your one thing. But with a removable pack, like you were saying, it makes a lot more sense, especially with the battery company involved and the second life usage. I just did some quick math here, and it's like that $140 a month. That's like 6 years, basically, of $140 a month to pay off that pack for the car. But if you were like the owner of the car and you were taking that option, you know, you it would just gives you a lot of flexibility, and it gives you like another option.
And just think about it, Tom, you never have to worry about battery pack degradation ever.
Right.
As long as you own the car. If anything, you'll be able to go further in a couple of years, because you'll just say, hey, take this battery pack. I want that new one that goes 50 miles further. So I think it's a good idea.
Well, you guys know that my Zoe is battery leased, right? So I'm in that boat. So it took £8,000 off the price of a new car for me. So that's why I did it, for instance.
Right.
Because it reduced my entry point of driving that car.
So, but now you have two bills. So how long will it take like to make up the difference?
Longer than I would own the car for. So I pay £50 a month for the battery. So over a year, what's that? That's 600 times by 12. And so I got £8,000. I could have bought a Renault Zoe with the battery owned,
right,
but we didn't have enough money. Now, right, if you're doing it on finance, then, and you're paying monthly for the car, then you might want to do that. But we were buying the car, and it's something that I didn't get my head around until I did it. But I own the car. I own all of the car apart from the battery. And I have a specialist EV insurance, as many people do. So when I called my insurance company who specialize in EVs, and I told them I had a Zoe, and they said, right, okay, is it battery lease, battery owned? And so it's battery lease. So I have to insure the battery in case the car is written off, because Renault will want their money. But that's fine. But they were prepared for that. It's a tick box on the screen. So the car is insured. The battery is insured. I do both of those. The lease is £50 a month that I pay to a separate, same as this, it's a separate company. And it's regular income for them, for Renault, or a division of Renault. And, you know, for me, it took £8,000 off the price of the car. Also, the only expensive bit of the car that can go wrong is the battery, and it's not my problem. And also, it comes with free recovery. So Renault do a service where if you do battery lease, if you run out of electricity through just stupidity because you forgot to charge it, they'll come and pick you up and take you home. So that, for me, made total sense. But I still tell friends about it, and they can't get their head around it. But I wonder if this is that's a microcosm of where we're going with cars. Like, how much of my car do I own? Well, all of it apart from the battery. Now, you can do the battery buyout. So I can contact Renault now for a price, and they'll look at my mileage and probably the battery health. Maybe I've got the little dongle that it goes in by the cigarette lighter, and it's 99% battery state of health, so it's still in good nick. It's a year old, and I can do a battery buyout if I wanted to, but it makes no sense because I'd be like, what do I get for it? I'm only £50 a month down on it anyway. But yeah, like I say, it's the larger thing about how we view cars. Like, we all grew up owning cars that didn't change the day after they left the factory. And now we have situations like where we see Rich Rebuilds, the YouTube channel, where he doesn't anymore, but take a scrap Tesla, put it back on the road, and yet Tesla were then able to go, well, hang on, we're turning off DC fast charging for that car because you might not have repaired it right. And, you know, the internet was up in arms because they're like, well, hang on, it's not Tesla's car to turn off DC fast charging. What? So it opens that question of, well, who owns the car? And so if we're moving to a model of, you don't really own the car, like, you maybe you buy it or lease it or finance it, but the car is outside your house. But I mean, how much of it do you really own? If a company can dial in over the air and turn features on, off, stop it even moving, for instance, do you own that car? How much do they still control that car? And so I think that it'll take a while for people to get their head around, and it might not happen outside of China, but the battery lease, the battery swap thing is a brilliant idea because it reduces your entry point to get that car, and it changes your relationship with the car. And I know that's a different... I'm sitting here, it's a different cultural thing in the US. I know that, you know, getting your driving license and learning to drive is a rite of passage in the US, and driving operates in a different kind of part of your country's culture as well. Like, the idea that you wouldn't own all of your car seems a bit crazy. So
yeah,
it's going to be really interesting where this goes.
Okay, Kyle, any further thoughts on that?
I'm curious to see how this renting battery thing actually plays out. Because, you know, if you look at the 2013 Smarts, they had some battery assurance plus plan. I don't think it was a battery rental, but it was like something to do with extended warranty. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I know I bought one secondhand or third hand at that point, you know, as I was the third owner. And it never got transferred into my name, and I didn't want it transferred in my name, so I never really brought it up. But I don't know what happened with that. I think someone's still spending $80 a month on that battery, but I wanted nothing to do with that, right? So, you know, who knows? But, you know, I would think the whole accident situation, selling, transactional, trading into a dealer, but not putting the contract in the dealer's name, who's going to, you know, withhold that contract? These are all questions that I think someone will figure out for the U.S. market. But that's my biggest thing. If you go to a used car dealer, trade in your Neo or any car with a rented battery, and you're like, by the way, now that I sold it to you, you have to spend $80 a month. to pay for that battery. They're not going to do that. They're just going to sell it off, and you know, the first owner is going to be stuck with that contract. Yeah, it
should be interesting.
So I wonder
people,
what's
people were
happen.
Asking about NIO actually coming to the States. I think in the comments of that article you had there, Tom, and I believe you said maybe in a couple of years they'll be in Europe, and shortly after that, hopefully the US. I know they have international ambitions.
Yeah, their CEO just did a live stream yesterday. And he made comments that, you know, their eyes are looking towards the West now. So, you know, it's the writing's on the wall. They do have plans. And that's something that'll be really interesting because the fact that it seems like their business model is based around battery swap and now battery as a service. And they don't have that infrastructure in the U.S. or Europe, you know, so. You know, that's going to be interesting. I always said that I loved what NIO was doing with battery swap in China. Right. And you know, I didn't know how well that would translate to other areas of the world. And I still don't know how well that would translate into the US and Europe. But I know it works there. I've done it. I've driven NIO's cars in China. I've used their battery swap. I've talked to their customers. Nearly everyone I spoke to, the NIO customers, said they probably wouldn't have gotten the car if it didn't offer the battery swap. So it works there, and it's selling NIOs. It'll be interesting to see what happens if and when NIO comes west and how they deal with battery swap in these different markets.
Right on. Well, we just want to hit a couple of things really quick. We're over our time, but I just want to mention some headlines here. Genesis of the Hyundai Group is testing some electric versions of their gasoline-powered models. So that'll be interesting to see. Keep an eye on it because they did such a great job of like the Hyundai Kona electric and the Niro, electric Niro, you know, taking a gas car and turning it into an electric car. And so they might be able to do that same magic with their more, what do you call that, more performance, luxury, premium kind of brand, Genesis. So that's something to keep an eye on. Also, if you're looking for improvements in your full self-driving in your Tesla, Elon Musk says they're doing a full rewrite of that software. And when it's done, the improvements will be like a quantum leap. And so that's definitely something to keep an eye out for. And also, Panasonic is going to invest $100 million in Tesla in the Gigafactory, I believe, and that will increase their output by about 10%, I believe. So that's, I'm not sure if that's going to be enough increase. That's kind of got me. We'll learn more about Tesla's battery strategy come Battery Day, which I believe is the 22nd of September. If I'm wrong, someone can correct me.
That's correct.
All right. Awesome. So that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post or the YouTube comment section below or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom is at Tomalog. Martin is at EV News Daily. Kyle is at Out of Spec. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all next week. Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.